There is a candle in every soul, some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit who brings a fire, ignites a candle, and makes it whole.
Good morning and welcome to this episode of Step Into the Light. I am your host, Patty Sheen. Thank you for listening. On this show, we introduce listeners to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light, and those who, through various ministries and creative endeavors, lead others on their journey from darkness to light. Good morning again and welcome. My guest today, John Nosker, is a Vietnam veteran, a retired airline employee, a rancher, and a pastor. He has extensive airline experience that has taken him all over the world. He currently ranches in the San Luis Valley of Colorado and serves as a fill-in pastor out of the Pueblo Presbytery. John held the position of mayor in a small town in Washington State in 1979 and was elected to a county commissioner position in Colorado in 2018. Good morning, John. Welcome to Step Into the Light.
Well, good morning, and thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you on the podcast today. I've only known you for a couple of months, but oh my goodness, you've shared so many stories with us at our church and in private conversations that I feel like I've known you for a long time. I'm going to start out asking you, what kind of childhood experiences influenced you to pursue a career in aviation?
Well, I took my first plane ride with my father when I was four. He had just gotten his license. And I got to ride around in a J3 Cub up in Bend, Oregon. And I fell in love with it at that point. So I was always active at one point or another throughout my childhood, you know, somehow around airplanes and all. I'd go out to the airport and hang out, or sometimes out to the old Stapleton Airport in Denver and stand there and watch those DC-7s and 6s and all fire up their engines and take off. I knew early on, in fact, when I was 12, I decided I wanted to be an airline pilot.
John, you and I share, we're kind of kindred spirits in that respect. I never did get to pursue any kind of career in aviation, but when I was a child, I grew up out on Long Island in New York, and we were right in the flight pattern for Kennedy Airport, what they used to call the holding
yes.
pattern, when the planes would get stacked up and waiting, and I used to spend hours out in our backyard in our hammock with a book, and when a plane would fly over, they were so close that I could read the name of the airline. And I always used to dream about flying in a jet. And I got my first experience flying in a jet when I was 16, went to California to visit relatives out there. And it was the coolest trip because something went wrong with the plane. We were delayed for hours. And when we finally got to leave, we were flying right at sunset. And, of course, flying west, we had the sunset ahead of us the whole time, so it was an amazing flight. And I could understand
that's
your
cool.
love of flying. And I got to ask you, did you ever fly in a glider?
Yes.
Okay.
I never got my glider's license, but I did fly in gliders out of the old Black Forest glider port by Colorado Springs.
Okay. Well, I hung around our little airport all day one day and finally got a ride in a glider, and I thought that was pretty neat, too.
That's real flying.
Yes. So what do you find most enjoyable about flying and why?
Oh, well, you know, flying in and of itself can be pretty boring, particularly on transoceanic flights where you're just sitting there watching the water go under your wings. So I think the takeoff experience and the landing experience, if those go well, there's just a feeling of satisfaction of a job well done. And then on the other occasions where you have to come in and the weather's against you and the visibility is horrible and you're able to make it in and get everybody on the ground safely, you walk away from that feeling very satisfied. It's when your training, your experience, whatever, it all kind of comes together at that moment. There's a lot of other decisions made when you're flying in the air, you know, and just getting the job done and done well. And then, of course, being in the air, you're in a three-dimensional space. And up and down. You know, you're not stuck in two dimensions like you are in a car, basically. And so there's that sense of, I want to call it, no, if you call it freedom, you're not tied to the earth at that point. All of that kind of comes together, and then whenever you make that greaser of a landing, and on those rare occasions when you get an applause from the passengers, it feels good.
I can imagine. I think it would be so fantastic to be able to fly, but having a visual impairment like I do, I would not quite make the grade, but but I still do enjoy, even in this modern day when things are not as fun as they were with flying, I still enjoy being in a plane and having the window seat and looking out at the clouds and all the different landscaping you see as you travel. So I can certainly understand the fascination because I'm right there with you.
Okay. Yeah, it is. I do enjoy it.
John, you grew up on a small ranch in Colorado, and then you lived other places, but you have owned your own ranch in the San Luis Valley for, it's been 25 plus years now.
I've been around production ag at one point or another most of my life. My family comes from production agriculture from when they landed, you know, on the Americas. So it's been part of the family heritage. I was married living up in the conifer area. We had a what would be a small ranch, a few hundred acres up there, but we just got totally crowded out by the urban pressures. What had been wide open, running cattle all over the place, what have you, that all changed, and we had over 100 homeowners that abutted us, fence line, right on our fence lines. And that led to conflict. They'd cut the fences, they were on the property, or they would call the cops if our cows got out. So my wife and I started looking, and we looked for about 3 years at ranches and finally settled on the San Luis Valley. And so we purchased down here. Part of my goal of being an airline pilot was the airline pilots I knew, who included my father-in-law, had ranches, and they were home all the time. And they made good money. And so I said, well, if I want to own a ranch and I like airplanes, then obviously that's a way to maybe accomplish both goals. So we've been down here for 25 years. I ran a pretty good size operation for up until about 5 years ago. And then I reduced my herd and sold off. I had federal grazing permits. I sold those off. And we scaled back down. But we've been raising cattle and sheep this whole time. And then I've had every stray that walks within a mile of the ranch ends up on the ranch, whether it's a dog, cat. I've had emus, I don't know what all, stray goats, stray sheep show up on the place, stray horses. But so we still have right now the horses, some sheep, cattle, and I guess that's about it, plus six dogs and two cats. And,
oh, my
and we love them all. And we're in the middle of calving right now. And so one of the reasons I was a little late joining you for this podcast was I was getting a briefing from my wife who said we had a first calf heifer that just calved out there, and she didn't quite, the heifer didn't quite know what to do, but she's figuring it out, so we're in good shape.
Oh, you know what? The ranching life just, I know it's hard work, but oh my goodness, there's so many aspects of it that I suppose it gets romanticized in books to a degree, but it just sounds like so much fun and such a way to connect with nature. And would you speak to that? How do you see God in this environment that you're in, John?
You see him every day. You know, I think about it. I live in an area that we consider beautiful. We have mountains surrounding the valley where we live here. I'm up close to the San Juan Mountains. And so you see that natural beauty, the sunrises, the sunsets, and what have you.
Yes.
The weather, even when the weather's bad, it lets you know you're alive. You're out in that windstorm, the snow blowing, what have you. But watching the nature itself, watching the animals, I'm so amazed. I stand in awe whenever a little lamb is born or a calf. It instinctively, you know, it struggles to get up and it instinctively goes to its mother and tries to nurse. And watching how the mothers respond to that animal. And, you know, they're very protective, and they snuggle and love that animal like you can't believe. And when I see that, I just know that God put this together. He put it all together. And even when it's the hard times, even whenever you have that, you know, the calf doesn't make it, something happens. It's all part of what God created here. you have the sadness, but it's over. It's way overpowered by the joy, and just the majesty of seeing how it all works together. Right now, we're waiting for spring. Our spring comes a little later than yours, because we're at 8,000 feet. But the birds are starting to come in, so we always mark down when the first robin shows up, or when we see the first bluebird, and when the cranes fly through, and it's just majestic. You know that God created this world.
No, even out here on the plains, John, of course, I don't have that, what I would call that stark beauty of the Rockies right in my backyard. As you know, I'm way out here, quite a ways away from the mountains. But still, even though you have to look for it to a degree, a little bit more out here on the plains, yeah, there is just so much beauty. I mean, I've been out here for over 40 years now, and I still enjoy driving from my town over to La Junta, which is 20 miles west, and just being able to see that wide open space and the cattle dotting the countryside and that kind of thing and the formation of the clouds in the sky and all that, it is just so wondrous, and you just look at it all in awe that God created all this, and that's why I love living in this country.
Absolutely, and you know, when I drive out to Los Animas, I've been able, I watch the seasons change. Mm-hmm. And so I see the crops starting to come up, or they're out working the fields or whatever. They've turned on the irrigation water. And you watch this cycle as they go through, and you see the new birth in the springtime. And it grows up, it matures, and they gather in the harvest. And it is beautiful out there. I like it out there, too.
John, you're living a very full life with your airline experiences and your ranching and everything. So what led you into ministry?
I don't know if I was led or if I got pushed. I grew up in church. My parents were devout Christians, so I was in church from the time that she could take me into church as a baby. So I always had that background. And then my mother prayed that one of her boys would turn out to be a preacher. And when I told her I was going to start preaching as a lay pastor, she kind of raised one eyebrow because she knows my history. Okay. I said, well, if I'm going to preach about sin, at least I know what I'm talking about. But it was something, I was too busy to, when I was flying and working the ranch and all of that, to get really active in the church. I really couldn't commit to a schedule at the church. But when I retired from flying, I retired a couple of years early, so I could focus on the ranch a little bit. I was going to a little Presbyterian church here in Monta Vista, and I talked to the pastor. I said, look, is there anything I can do around here, you know, like mow the lawn or I could do whatever? And he says, have you thought about being a lay pastor? And I said, well, not really. He said, well, the Presbyterians have a lay pastor program. And would you be interested in committing a couple of years of time to go to the classes and study and whatever? And I said, well, yes, I would. So I went through that program, and then people started calling me, the pastor was going to be gone or something like that, at fill in these churches. And then I'd fill in for my pastor here, Monty. And when he retired, they came to me and said, would you mind filling the pulpit for a while? I said, well, I'll give you 3 or 4 months, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, that turned to 8 years. You know how those stories
go.
Oh,
my goodness, John. I didn't realize it was that long. Wow.
Yeah. I enjoyed the ministry. I mean, you know, it's like everything. There are highs and lows. And, I never had that burning bush moment where I had a vision or anything that says, you're going to go be a pastor. It was just kind of that door opened and I just kind of walked on through it. I think I got more benefit out of it more than anybody that was in the congregation, because when you're preaching and you're studying and you're coming up with the sermon or whatever, I find that I'm preaching to myself. And so there's been times when I walk out of that pulpit going, did you listen to what you just said?
Mm-hmm.
You're exhorting these people to do this or do that. Are you doing it? I absolutely believe I've gained more out of this than I've ever given.
I think that is such an interesting statement to make, John. And it just goes to show how sometimes God enriches us in ways that we would not have imagined. I know I've heard of that. I'm involved in, trying to be anyway, in writing. And I've heard many people say, you know, I worked on this book or whatever, and it never went anywhere, but eventually I realized that God had me write that for me. So
yes.
There's a
yes,
parallel there with that message, and thank you so much for sharing that with us. Well, there's a lot of different paths a person can take in ministry, and I don't know if you have a particular what I would call a passion or not, but some people, their passion is for youth ministry, and for some it's for grief and loss people that are dealing with that, or counseling young couples in marriage, or hospice care, that kind of thing. Is there any particular field that you say, yeah, this is my thing, this is what really, really lights me up and makes me feel like it's the one passion that I really have?
I don't think you can be a preacher without caring for people.
Definitely.
And so marriage counseling, those things are hard because in order to do it effectively, you have to almost become detached. The hospice care, dealing with people who are at the end of life or whatever, can be very rewarding. And dealing with grief times when somebody's lost a loved one, at that point, I don't have the ability to stay detached. There's a certain amount of empathy that goes along with that. And you bring your own life experiences into that, because I've lost a daughter, lost parents, and, there've been losses in my life. And so it helps me empathize with them. But I think what I enjoy most when I finish is preaching, because I don't view it as me necessarily talking at people. I view it more as almost a conversation, even though it's a one-sided conversation. I came from the back pew up to the pulpit. Okay. I didn't go through seminary. I didn't go through this career path of being a pastor. And so I view it more as I'm just talking to my friends and sharing with them whatever insights I have. If I can use an illustration that helps somebody maybe pick up on it. Jesus taught a lot in parables. He tried to speak the language of the people with whom he was speaking. That's more of the style I have, but it's just me telling a story, but it's a story about God. It's a story about the Bible. And trying to relate it to just our everyday lives. And if somebody picks up on something out of that, the Holy Spirit puts up, I often pray. I said, Lord, it's not what I say, it's what they hear. So would you make them hear what you want them to hear?
Yes.
Regardless of what comes out of my mouth. That's kind of how I view it. So I enjoy that aspect of it. I like relating to the people in the church house. Or I enjoy a one-on-one conversation.
I was going to say, John, you, more than standing up there and preaching, you want to establish a relationship with your congregation, which is what you do. I think is what you're saying.
I would like that.
Yes.
What I would like, yeah.
Yes. And it reminds me of what we as Christians are supposed to do. We're not supposed to be, quote-unquote, practicing religion. We're supposed to be in relationship with Jesus. That's what our faith is all about.
That's it. That says it all right there.
So it sounds like, once again, using the word parallel, your feelings about your preaching is in parallel with what we are supposed to be as Christians. So, yeah, that makes perfect sense to me, John. And let me tell you, you have definitely done that, in my opinion.
Well, thank you for the kind words. A person walks out of there, they never know. If what's been said touched somebody or gave them a little insight. But, that is truly seed planting. All I can do is scatter those seeds, and the Lord has to grow the crop.
That's exactly right. We're going to go to a short break here. I want to remind listeners that you are listening to Step Into the Light right here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Patty Sheen. My guest today is John Nosker. John is an extremely interesting person in that he has quite an eclectic background. He is a Vietnam veteran. He's a retired airline employee. He's a rancher, and he is also a pastor. We've been talking about some of John's experiences in the field of aviation and in his ranching experiences and what led him into ministry. Further on into the show, we will be talking about some of the issues that our churches encounter these days and that we as Christians encounter. And John has some very interesting thoughts to share on that, I'm sure. I've heard him preach at my church, and his messages are always inspirational and thought-provoking. So this show can be heard again on my website, which is Patty Sheen, that's spelled PattiSheene.com. So if you've listened to the show and you'd like to listen to it again, or we'd love to have you refer it to friends or family who might enjoy it, so just go to PattiSheene.com, and there you go to the top of the page, Blog Talk Radio tab. Click on that. You will find a link to all of our shows that we have recorded to date. Also underneath each show is a more information tab, and that's where I will have even more information. Well, John, here on Step Into the Light, my guests often talk about ways that they lead others out of darkness, whether it be through ministry or writing or other creative endeavors. But many of them also talk about dark times that they have experienced and how they found their own way out of that darkness. Do you have a time in your life that was particularly difficult for you that you feel comfortable sharing with us today?
Yes, kind of on two levels. One is kind of what's happened in my life overall and how I ended up in different places, whether it was going into the Air Force, because during Vietnam I could have just as easily gone into the Army and carried a gun.
Mm-hmm.
And it was literally one of those, well, I'll try this, I'll try that, and elected to the Lord. And so throughout my life there's been those, and sometimes I didn't understand it. So it's like when people talk about boot camp, I wouldn't do it again, but I wouldn't trade the experience for $1 million. And so you have those moments that are hard, and you get, the faith is persevering and getting through it. But I would say one of the darkest times I've experienced is I lost my adult daughter to drug addiction.
Oh, my,
and,
John, I did not know that.
She died. It was just in 2014. And so, and it was an unfortunate scene. I had to go out and, you know, I saw her laying there and what have you. And she had been struggling off and on for several years with alcohol and drugs, and she'd come out of it. And, you know, you'd think you'd see, okay, there's light at the end of the tunnel helping, and then something would happen in her life, and she'd fall back into it. And it was the test of faith was, you know, you're praying, you're just, Lord, please give me the words to say, help me do the right thing, you know, save this young woman, and bring her back, and it's over, she's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have those remorse moments. If I just done one more thing, if I'd just been a little more proactive here, if I'd have, you know, gotten in for help or whatever. And so it was a very dark moment where I go, God, am I even doing the right thing here? You know, am I just out here using my own brain and I've got my own solutions and obviously they didn't work? There was that sense of failure, sense of loss. Through that process, it just came to this, is I can't fix anything. All I can do is do my best. And then I have to just say, Lord, it's in your hands. And then I just have to accept it. Yeah, there's a sadness, there's a loss, and there's the grief. There is that sense of failure. But I said, Lord, you know, your ways are higher than mine. Your thoughts are greater than my thoughts. And I have to accept this. And if I did something wrong here, teach me. Help me learn from this experience. You know, use it. I just had to turn it over. Lord, here it is. And here I am with it. Because I don't know what to do. That was a very, very dark time for me. And she had 5 children who were teenagers and about to leave the home and what have you. And so out of that, I have a wonderful relationship with those grandchildren. You know, and I like being their grandpa. And I just think about it. I said, well, I've experienced something that a lot of people have experienced. And I'm in an area where, I don't know if we're unique, but it seems like drugs are prevalent. We see lives destroyed by it, families destroyed. You know, it's never just one person. It affects everybody around them.
Yes.
And I don't know that I've been able to take that and maybe help somebody else by a word or words of comfort or whatever. But I've experienced it, and I went through it, and I thought about faith, Lord. You know, I prayed for this. Like, you know, you didn't give me what I was asking for. But I came to the conclusion that faith isn't about getting the answer you were expecting. Faith is trusting God when you don't get the answer.
I love that statement. That is so very true.
So that's, I guess, to answer that question, that was my dark time, and that's how I've emerged through it. And it's changed me. It certainly has.
And obviously your daughter was, I mean, she was no young kid, like in her, like 20. I mean, she was well into adulthood when this happened, if she already had five kids of her own. Oh, my goodness,
oh, yeah.
John. Wow, that is so powerful. Thank you for sharing that with us. That's very personal, and I want to thank you for being so transparent and sharing that experience with us, because that's something that's very, I'm sure, still gut-wrenching for you to talk about. So thank you so much for sharing that with me and with listeners today.
Certainly.
Well, John, you've preached at my church a few times now, and we're always excited to see you come, because your messages are just so inspirational. And like I said before, you're a dynamic speaker, and you love to tell stories, and you're just great to listen to. One message in particular that struck me was the subject, I love this term, of spiritual vertigo. Would you share with our listeners what that means?
Vertigo is something you experience where your senses aren't working right and you're off balance, inner ear problems, whatever, and you can't stand up. The world feels upside down to you, topsy-turvy. And in flying, that was something that we had to be aware of all the time, because we could experience vertigo whenever we didn't have any visual outside reference to tell us what was up or down. We had to rely on our instruments. And if you relied on your feelings, you could literally get upside down in an airplane and not know it, and just fly that thing all the way into the ground thinking that you were flying straight and level. But your instruments would be screaming at you saying you're not. You're upside down and you're descending. And I see that in spiritual lives, where we start relying on our feelings. We feel like things are going straight, we're straight and level, and in fact we're not. We're being deceived. And we know that the devil is the father of lies. He will do anything he can, and just slight little imbalances that he can get into our lives spiritually can lead us into disasters. And so the thing we have to watch out for is constantly, as in an airplane, you're constantly cross-referencing your instruments to make sure everything's going okay and that you're doing what you think you're supposed to be doing. And the same thing in our spiritual lives. Well, how do we cross-check that? What do we look for guidance to tell us, hey, you're leaning to the left or to the right and you need to be standing straight up? How do we know that in our spiritual lives? And that's why I say, you go back to Scripture. And I don't worry about how many people Christ fed when he fed the multitudes. I don't want to get into these nitpicking, hair-splitting arguments about what happened when. What I look for is, what was God always saying to us from the very, very beginning all the way to the end? And it's a story of redemption. It's a story of faith. It is a story of listening to God. He speaks to us through Scripture. He speaks to us through our prayers. He can speak to us even in a sermon on occasion. But also our friends around us, those people that are God's emissaries, who are there sometimes to admonish us. You know, Scripture talks about admonishing people whenever they start to drift. That's not the same as judging them or being a boss or anything like that. It's done with love, and it comes from spiritual maturity. When things start going, seem to be kind of wrong, get back on instruments, get back in Scripture, so that God will speak to you. The Holy Spirit speaks to us. And it might be that one little phrase. I love reading Christ's words. If a person has a red letter edition of the Bible, I love going through there and reading Christ's words in the gospel. He didn't preach like a priest, like a preacher, like a priest. He spoke to people's hearts. And he wasn't afraid to tell them whenever they were messing up. They didn't beat up on him. He admonished them gently. On occasion, when it was the Pharisees or somebody like that, he might get a little perturbed. But generally, he spoke to them gently. It was subtle, small corrections. If you get way out, and you've watched people do this, they fall away from the church, their family life falls apart, whatever happens in their lives, and now they're way out there. They're upside down and they're headed for the ground. And whenever you can get them back right side up and get them back, it takes a little bit of time to get them back on course. But that's what we do. And our job as Christians is, one, to help others, but but to make sure that we are flying straight and level in our spiritual lives. So that's kind of what it was, because I've had vertigo in aircraft where I felt like I was going one direction, I was doing totally the opposite, and I just had to, through sheer discipline, look at my instruments and believe them, just flat believe them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of metaphors and analogies that can come from that. One being, you may have an instrument that's broken. And one of the things they did whenever we were learning to fly is we'd cover up a bunch of instruments and just give us just a minimum and say, fly. You can't look outside the airplane. You know, we got a hood on us so we couldn't see outside the airplane. And we're only looking at two or three instruments. What is that airplane doing? And it was training. That training creates a discipline so that whenever you get into these, we call them upset situations, you can get right side up. And that's what the Bible does. It's our instrument panel. And it can bring us back. But we have to focus on it and use the discipline and not just rely on our feelings or our emotions of the moment.
I really like that analogy, John. And, yeah, it is so easy for a person that someone is trying to steer back in the right direction to turn around and saying, you have no right to judge me. That's usually the first thing that comes out of their mouth, you know, and you clarified that very well, the difference between the two.
Okay, thank you. I try.
Well, you're doing very well. John, you have pretty much pastored smaller churches, and I'm sure you have seen in different churches that you have been in that we're struggling right now. Of course, there was the pandemic, but even before that, I think church attendance is down, and we're struggling financially because of that. Where do you think the small church is headed these days?
I think the small churches are pretty much universally struggling. Even some larger churches are struggling. I mean, we can blame the pandemic. That's our standard go-to now for something that went wrong. It's a pandemic. But
good point.
this has been developing over generations. You can think back when you were young, and since I'm older than you, when I was young, what happened to church? Well, church was kind of the center of religious people's lives. And there weren't as many distractions. We talk about the distractions out there. I think one of the things that started killing churches when the TV came in and Bonanza came on.
Because people
would skip whatever. And stay
as much
watch
as
Bonanza.
I love my Gunsmoke, John, I have to kind of.
Yes. But that's not the first time that's happened. Throughout the history of the church, there have been ebbs and flows. And, we talk about these great evangelists back in the day, the Great Awakening, some of these things that happened back in history, because people had fallen away. There were other distractions. They were just different ones, but we are naturally distracted, and Satan uses those bright, shiny objects to draw us away from the core. And then within the churches himself, at the devil's playground, he starts fights over petty stuff.
Yeah.
I've seen churches split over what color carpet they were going to put in.
Exactly.
And, just silliness. But today, we are facing, let's call it headwinds, and particularly small churches. But I'm involved in a church right now that used to have 300 people in attendance. They're down to 35.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's not abnormal. And thousands of reasons around it. It doesn't matter, because a church is a place where, yes, you want to be with people, fellow believers. You reinforce each other. But we let our egos get in the way so often. Or we get offended. I used to say that people's skin got exceptionally thin when they walked through the church door. And they were just looking for a reason to be offended. Preacher said something, or I actually had this happen to me where I was a guest preaching at a church, and I'm sitting in a pew because I'd gotten there early talking to some people, and this little lady came in, "You're in my seat." It didn't bother me, but what if I was a visitor in that church and that happened? What does that tell me about Christ's people? I think about that. So in the small churches, oftentimes God takes things down to a remnant. And sometimes there is no remnant. But if there's a remnant, God works with small things. Think of Elijah. When he's up there sitting in that cave, he's just done this tremendous miracle, all these priest of Baal had been killed, the fire came down from heaven, burned up the altar, And he's on the run from Jezebel. And God took him from that great victory to a place of total isolation and loneliness where Elijah's crying out saying, I'm the last one, God. And God said, no, you're not. I got 7,000 people over here you don't even know about. They've never
right.
bowed down to Baal. Okay. And so I think small churches sometimes end up in their cave. But that doesn't mean that it's the end. And you'll find yourself shrunk down to the remnant. Okay. Well, I have found that if you have one person and two others that will support them, and they form a three, you know, like a three-legged stool.
Yes, and the strand
God
of three.
God will work miracles.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to be committed to it. And you have to sometimes say, Lord, I don't know what to do next. We don't know what to do next. We're here. We want to serve. And, you know, you're out on the Eastern Plains, and you know how those little towns, the economies have gone upside down, you know,
right.
the counties got the high poverty rate. Some of the counties that I'm around have high poverty rates, and I've seen these little churches shrink down. They've got a bunch of closed churches around here, but I think some of them closed simply because people just wore out. The drivers died, moved away, got old, whatever, and they just got worn out. It's about encouraging each other. So I've preached on Sundays where there was two people in the congregation.
Yeah.
I preached whenever there had been lots. Not lots. If I have 150 people in front of me, that's a big crowd.
Mm-hmm.
I've never preached in front of thousands. And usually that was for a funeral or a wedding. But,
right.
you know, you get down. But it doesn't matter. You hold together. And, you know, the church isn't the church house. The church is the people. There were no church houses when Christ was walking the earth. There weren't church buildings when Paul was out doing his ministry. Where were they meeting? They were meeting homes. But they were called Christ's church, the ecclesia.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is the people. And if the people are there, God will honor that. Now, the church may end up closing its doors, but the ministry, the remnant can still function because not only are you there to support each other, but you're there to show the world what Christ through you. You don't hide your lamp under a bushel. In the community, you show Christ. Another thing that hurts small churches is they can be exceptionally cliquish. My family's been here. My great-granddaddy dug the basement and the foundation for this church. And so you get this sense of ownership and a mine, and it's not mine. It's God's.
Right. It's Christ Church. Yeah.
It's a Christ Church. And so if people can get that attitude, you look at Los Animas. I don't know. I can't remember what the population of Los Animas is. And there's a lot of churches. You know, there's a church on every corner there in one little part of town.
Right.
But there are enough people in your area, what I call your combat radius, that you could fill up every one of those churches. But people will come because of relationships. Small church ministry is about relationships. You know, you'll deal with all the stuff. Well, I know what you were like when you were a kid and you were such a hellion and you were out doing all this stuff. It doesn't matter. I'm Christ's child. Okay? This just shows you what God can do for somebody. You ought to try it.
Yeah. Well,
and
I just looked it up, John, just for to be interested myself. I just looked it up. And it says that our population in 2019 was 2,269 people.
Is that in the county or the town?
In the town. Yeah, I said Los Angeles alone. Yeah, so just for listeners who
you don't have enough pews.
Pardon?
You don't have enough pews for all those people.
Exactly.
If everybody in that town went to church, you'd run out of room. And those people have needs. And a lot of times they don't even know they need it. You know, it's and sometimes you're just not going to get – you can't get them all. I mean, when Christ sent out the 70, you know, two by two, he said that, you know, if they're not received, the peace comes back on you, shake the dust off and go on to the next one.
And move on,
but
yeah.
We move on, but we show everybody in our daily lives. And when those people hit a bad spot in their lives where they're just lost, you're there. Or they can look to you and say, well, there's an example. There's somebody who went through what I'm going through. And we just show the love. What the greatest of these is love, right? Faith, hope, and love, the greatest is love. And what did Christ talk about? He talked about love. You can tell when somebody cares. By caring, you reach those few. You may only reach one. But I've watched, you know, the congregation in Los Animas, and pandemic's done thing. You've lost some church members recently. And yes, it's hard. But God has you there. Just commit and submit. It's all about submission. Lord, I'm here in Los Angeles, and we've only got 15, 20, 30 people in church. He doesn't care. You're there. Just be his servant. Be his
emissary. Yes, and another quote that I just love, and I'm ashamed that I can't tell you who said it because it's a very famous quote, is preach the gospel at all times. When necessary, use words.
Exactly. That's an excellent quote.
But I'm ashamed that I can't remember who said it.
I can't remember who said it either. It was one of those. But it's absolutely true. It doesn't matter what we say. You hear that all the time. I don't care what you say. I want to see what you do. If you're hiring somebody for a job, they can come in with the most glowing resume and they can talk themselves up like they're the smartest thing since whatever. I want to see you perform. Okay? Talk's cheap. Do you walk the walk? And God just asks us to be faithful. He asks us to be faithful in a little tiny thing. Be faithful with the little stuff you have. Be faithful with what he's given you. Be faithful in the place that he's put you. That's all he asks. And you may leave this world saying, I'm the last one. Well, you're not. God's got the big picture. And the faith is overcoming those feelings.
Exactly.
When you just say, God, I don't understand. It's beyond me. I have no idea. I've said that even in my preaching. Lord, I have no idea why you put me here. I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea where you put me in this valley. You know? Are you sure this wasn't just my idea and you just let me struggle through it? Be careful what you wish for. But I don't think that happened. Or I may leave this earth never knowing what God's purpose was. I don't have to know. All I have to do is be faithful.
That's the thing. We don't have to know. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
As much as curious as we are to know.
Oh, yeah, I'd like to
know. There may never be a need for
us
to know.
But I think the other thing is it's kind of like this podcast now in the times, and you've flattered me and complimented me on some things, which I don't think I deserve, but I thank you for it anyhow. But it's those cherries on the cupcake. You know, you get that little cherry on the cupcake. Whew, wow. That boosts me along. Now I can go on for another week.
Mm-hmm.
I got that little boost. It's not, we talk about showers of blessings. Yeah, he does bless us, but it's not the kind of blessings that we expect. We have to stop and say, hold it, I am blessed. I've been blessed.
Yes.
When we can look at it like that, then the struggles aren't as hard. I know when you're in a small church and you're looking at the budget, you're looking at the income, and you're going, can we even pay for the bulletins? Can we turn on the lights?
Mm-hmm.
How are we going to do that?
Yeah, pay the pastor.
Well, pay a pastor. That's a huge challenge. I mean, that's why people hire old guys like me, because we're retired and we've got, we don't have to rely on that income. We're not raising a family.
Right.
You know? And so it is a huge challenge. And I see that as being a giant challenge. But in my view, in God's scheme of things, it doesn't matter. I've told little churches this before whenever there's always going to close up. We're just quitting. And I've seen some churches close I didn't think should have, personally. And I said, it's about faith, guys. If you're doing God's work and you're where he wants you to be, rely on him and let him do the miracle. But, he didn't pull Peter out of the water until Peter was starting to cry for help. He was about to go under.
That's right.
And so just because you think we're going under doesn't mean just look up to God and say, God, until you tell me different, I'm going to just keep, as an old friend of mine, he was an old mentor of mine, he says, you just keep chopping wood. Just keep chopping wood for the Lord. I'm at the wood pile. I got an axe. My job is to chop wood. The Lord wants me to do something else. He'll give me a nudge and he'll open doors or he'll shove me out. Whatever. It may be a painful exit, but sometimes the Israelites really didn't want to leave Egypt. Remember, they got across the river and across the Red Sea and started hollering before they even got across the Red Sea. You took us away from our homes. We're all going to die out. They hadn't been out of town a day and a half, and they had already started longing for that horrible place that they had been. And so sometimes God has to make us uncomfortable to get us to move. And there was a saying in the Denver Post years ago that said, there is no hope for the satisfied man. They had it in their little tagline down there every day. And it's so true, because if we get to the point where we're that comfortable and we're that satisfied, there's something wrong. Because we should always feel challenged. Our faith is constantly challenged. And when we get to the point where we're just comfortable, there's a problem. God takes people out of their comfort zones, always. And you just read through, whether it's Joseph and Mary, and Joseph is in a bad place. You know, he has to make a decision about this woman to whom he's engaged. You think about Moses in the wilderness. You think about Joseph, the favorite son. And he goes and spends like 30 years in the clink for something he didn't do. Then God brought him out. Okay? Pretty soon you go with David, Lord, how long? I'm waiting. How long is it going to be? And we have faith and we have hope. And we rely on that. And then we have to be willing to, if we've done our best, we've done everything that we feel the Lord has led us to do, and we don't get the results we want, we have to just accept it that this is what God wants. It's like losing my daughter. Those were not the results I wanted at all. I wouldn't have picked that path.
No, but, definitely not. Of course not.
But God knows what he's doing. Okay, so it's that spiritual vertigo thing again. It's not about how I feel about it. It's about, what do I know to be the truth? Where do I go to find the truth? Where do I go to get encouragement and reinforcement? Polish it up. And faith isn't something you put in the box and take it out when you need it. Faith is daily. It's a daily walk.
Yes, it is, definitely.
So that's my sermon for the day.
John, you have shared some really profound thoughts with us, and I want to thank you for that. And something else I want to pick your brain about a little bit. I tend to believe, and I think you do too, that there is coming persecution for us here in America. Do you think that the church is preparing its people for that appropriately?
The short answer is no.
I'm right with you there.
Right.
Yeah.
Christ said to look up. When you see these signs, look up. Now, I don't know if it's going to happen tomorrow morning or if it's going to happen 1,000 years from now. I don't have to know that. I'm not going to spend my time trying to dope out when the Lord's going to return or tribulations or the persecution is coming. We are seeing it. And like a frog in the pot, you know, you don't throw them in the hot pot. You throw them in the cold one and turn the temperature up and he just lays there and dies. And it's coming to us incrementally, but it's becoming, the magnitude is increasing, and it's becoming more rapid. And we're seeing it in our children. We're seeing what's happening to our children, what other people are doing to our children, and how they're messing with their minds, whether it's on social media or in the schoolhouse or just out in the world. I asked this question of a person one time. I said, if the Lord came to you in a vision and said, Bill, you're the only person I'm sharing this with, but the Lord's second coming is going to be Saturday night at 5 o'clock. And he tells you this on Monday. I said, what are you going to do for the week? He said, I'm going to get in the Bible. I said, I think that's the wrong answer. I said, what are we supposed to be doing? He called us to harvest. He said, the harvest is ready. We should be out there gathering for the kingdom. If you've only got 5 days to do it, if you've got 1 day, you've got 20 minutes. Go out and gather for the kingdom. I said, it is to save souls. It is to reach the unreached. And that doesn't mean you get a sign that the end is coming and you stand on a street corner and preach at them. I mean, some people may be called to do that. You know, Paul preached on street corners. But it is, why are we here? Why, whenever the Lord chooses us, we're the elect, we've come to Christ, we've been baptized, we've done all the stuff, went through all the steps, why didn't he just take us? We're done. He leaves us here for a reason, and multiple reasons. God always, he multitasks in ways we can't even imagine. So one is for our growth. Test us for testing. Okay, how is our faith going to grow? Get saved, go to heaven. You're done. No, he's going to leave you here for testing, and he's going to leave you here to do his work. And just like the servants, the master gave me some money to do something with, to take care of until he got back.
The talents,
he expects us to do something. The talents. He expects us to do something with it. And that something doesn't have to mean that you've led thousands to the Lord. That's something maybe you touched one life. I think of the widow in the temple who dropped her two little coins, all she had, in the offering box. You know, they probably barely counted those at the end of the day when they were counting the collection, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
But that woman has lived in perpetuity because Christ made a point of speaking to her sacrifice. So I have friends over the years. If God has called me to do do this, you know, save the world kind of thing. And I go, you sure? Maybe he has. You know, but we tend to want to do the big things. We want to make the big splash. God works in the little things. He works at the molecular level. There's 7+ billion people on this planet right now. God knows who they all are. He even knows how many stars are out there. And so he just gives us a little job to do and go do it. And sometimes he'll give you a big job to do. You might be a David. You might be a Moses, one of the great prophets. But trust me, all those guys suffered along the way. And so I don't think a lot of them really want to be picked like that. You know, it's a hard life for those guys. But it's the faithful in the small things. And God will give you the increase. He gives us the increase. But the increase, it may not be visible to us. But who is measuring us, our performance? Who's measuring our heart? It's God. It doesn't matter what the rest of the world says about us. It's what God says about us.
Boy, that's the very truth,
that's
John.
But all you have to do is just be faithful in what you're doing. Let God take that. He'll take that little bit. He'll take that little, you know, a few loaves of bread and some fishes and feed thousands.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that little boy walked up there with that. He didn't know. Well, he had no idea what was going to happen. But he gave it, and then he let the Lord do it. That little boy did his part. God always requires an act of submission and an act of obedience before he performs a miracle. The act of submission might just be a woman in the crowd who reaches over and touches the hem of his garment. That's what he does. Okay? It might be a centurion saying, my servant's dying. And Christ says, it's okay. Your servant's fine. It could be anything. So we don't get to tell God how to do his work. We just go and do what he tells us. Stand where he tells us to stand and go where he tells us to go. And let him take care of the rest of the stuff. I've only got shoulders so broad. What can I carry around?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
What
I'm thinking too, look at the woman who was the adulteress in the Bible, and they were going to stone her. And, I mean, at one point in her life, here she is, this quote-unquote lowly person, and yet her story has carried on through 2,000 years now. You know,
2,000 years.
It's just amazing.
And who? Think of the lessons that are taught by that story. You know, there were several women in Christ. I think of Mary Magdalene. I think of the woman caught in adultery. I think of the woman at the well in Samaria. And when you think about what Christ is doing, he is talking to women that he should have nothing to do with by their religious tradition.
Mm-hmm.
He shouldn't even be around them. He certainly shouldn't be talking to them. A Jewish man would never speak to a Samaritan woman, ever.
Yes, I remember you did
awful.
A sermon on that at our church.
Well, when you think about that, it doesn't mean we go out there and necessarily preach in bars, okay? But because I've known preachers that claim that's what they were doing, but they had to be escorted home. And
that's funny.
But it is, look, it's really simple. I mean, it's complex and it's simple. God is exceptionally complex, but he does things in some very simple ways. And, you know, for our part of it, simple. Hold out the rod. Touch my garment. Stand still while I rub some mud in your eyes. Get up and walk. Experience that. Put themselves in the presence of Christ. They approach Christ. Well, how do we approach him today? Through prayer, through scripture, and through our Christian friends and associates. We can learn from all of that. We just have to be willing to learn. We have to be listening. You know, the still small voice that Elijah heard in the cave, you know, the earthquake, the storm, all of this. God's voice wasn't in that. It was a still small voice and a whisper that Elijah really had to listen to it. And I found myself expecting the big sign, the big miracle, the big this, the big that. The miracles happen on really small scales every day. I see miracles there on the ranch every day. God put this together. That's a miracle.
Yeah, that's the whole miracle right there. Well, John, I could talk to you for probably the next 3 hours at least, but Blog Talk Radio won't let me.
Well, you know, rules are rules, right?
So,
well, I thank you for the opportunities. I always enjoy talking with you.
I
want to
thank you so much for coming on the show today, John. I appreciate your time. You shared some very personal experiences and a lot of insight about our spiritual growth.
Well, I hope
thank you so much.
Something comes out. Well, thank you for the opportunity, Pat. I really appreciate it. Thank you for what you do.
Okay. Well, thank you, John, and God bless you. Listeners, in closing, we all encounter dark periods in our lives to one degree or another. During those difficult times, strive to seek the light, knowing that when we allow it to shine through, it is so much brighter than we remembered. Thank you so much for listening today. Until next time, God bless you.
There is a candle in every soul, some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit who brings a fire, ignites